Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak, Alice Bryant, and Anna Mateo. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, here is Dan Novak.
Ross Bagney was a 68-year-old small business owner in Cheyenne, Wyoming. He could have gotten the COVID-19 vaccine in early February, but decided not to. He became infected. He died on June 4th after spending more than 3 weeks in the hospital with coronavirus. He never went out, so he didn't think he would catch it, said his sister, Karen McKnight. She thought, why take the risk of not getting vaccinated? Nearly all COVID-19 deaths in the United States are among people who were not vaccinated. Experts say this shows how effective the vaccines are. Daily reported deaths are below 300 a day. But the latest numbers suggest that there could be almost no deaths if everyone eligible got vaccinated. The Associated Press studied data provided by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention from May. The AP found that infections in fully vaccinated people made up less than 1.1% of 107,000 COVID-related hospitalizations. In addition to that, only 0.8% of the 18,000 people who died of COVID-19 were fully vaccinated. Dr. Rochelle Walensky is the head of the CDC. She said Tuesday that the vaccine is so effective that nearly every death, especially among adults, due to COVID-19 is, at this point, entirely preventable. Deaths in the U.S. have dropped from a high of more than 3,400 a day in the middle of January. That point was reached after vaccinations had been available for only 1 month. The CDC said about 63% of all Americans able to get the vaccine, people 12 and older, have received at least one dose. It is estimated that 53% are fully vaccinated. Unlike much of the world, the United States now has a large vaccine supply. Demand for shots has dropped, and there is a vaccine surplus. The state of Arkansas has one of the lowest vaccination rates. 33% of the population is fully vaccinated. The AP reports that cases, hospitalizations, and deaths are rising there. Asa Hutchinson is the governor of Arkansas. It is sad to see someone go to the hospital or die when it can be prevented, he tweeted. Washington State's King County includes the city of Seattle. Its public health department found only 3 deaths in a 60-day period in people who were fully vaccinated. In the remaining 62 deaths, 95% had not been vaccinated or had received just one dose. David Michaels is a disease expert at George Washington University's School of Public Health in Washington, D.C. He said the stories of unvaccinated people dying may push others to get vaccinated. But young adults, the group least likely to be vaccinated, may be pushed more by a desire to protect their loved ones. Michaels was the head of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration under former President Barack Obama. He said people should get paid time off to get the shots and recover from any side effects. I'm Dan Novak.
Sinking land, a rising sea, and other climate change effects have killed a wooded area in Louisiana where a Native American chief played as a child. In the nearby Mississippi River Delta system, middle school students can stand on islands that formed the same year they were born. NASA is using methods like air-based technology and boats on islands in a 5-year, $15 million study of these places. One area is connected to a river and growing. The other is disconnected and dying. Scientists from NASA and 6 U.S. universities are aiming to create computer models that can be used with satellite data. Together, the information can show countries around the world which parts of their deltas are savable and which are past hope. Mark Siemerd is lead scientist of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He said if countries have to choose between saving one area or losing everything, it is good to know where their resources can help people. Though oceans are rising because of climate change, the world's river deltas are sinking and getting smaller. Deltas produce much of the world's seafood and are home to more than 300 million people. To find out where to strengthen dying deltas, NASA is studying water flow in and out of 2 of Louisiana's river basins, the Atchafalaya and Terrebonne. They are examining the sediment and plants that can slow sediment flow and pull carbon gases from the air. Louisiana holds 40% of the nation's wetlands, but they are disappearing fast. Around 5,180 square kilometers of them have been lost since the 1930s. That is about 80% of the nation's total wetland loss, says the U.S. Geological Survey Agency. The scientists are using 2 kinds of radar and a spectrometer device, which measures more colors than the human eye can see. High-technology NASA airplanes have been putting the instruments to work, collecting information on things like water height and the kinds and density of plants. On boats and islands, scientists and students are measuring things like water currents and the width of trees. Their findings will be compared with those of the air-based instruments. Robert Twilley is a professor of oceanography and coastal sciences at Louisiana State University. He told the Associated Press that one of the hardest parts of studying a delta is that you can only understand one small piece at a time. But working with NASA offers the ability to understand the whole delta, he said. The Mississippi River collects 150 million tons of sediment each year. But mainly because of flood prevention systems, most sediment shoots into the Gulf of Mexico instead of staying in wetlands. Sediment from the Atchafalaya River now fills Louisiana's Wax Lake Delta, which dates back to only 1942. At that time, federal engineers dug an outlet into the lake to reduce flooding in a city about 32 kilometers away. Sediment from the Atchafalaya River filled the lake. Then it began creating islands in the Gulf. Older wetlands in areas surveyed by NASA's aircraft have more kinds of wildlife, and they have fertile soil from housing generations of plants. Along the nearby Hog Bayou area, for example, colorful birds fly through the trees, and in the very wet areas, osprey birds sit on top of cypress trees, and alligators float in the water below. I'm Alice Bryant.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Hot weather kills hundreds of people every year. The World Health Organization estimates that from 1998 to 2017, more than 166,000 people died as a result of extreme heat waves. That includes the more than 70,000 people who died during the 2003 heat wave in Europe. Yet, heat-related deaths and sickness are preventable. There are steps you can take to stay safe during periods of very high temperatures. Many things can affect your body's ability to cool itself during extremely hot weather. For example, when the humidity is high, body sweat will not dry as quickly. This restricts the body's ability to release heat. So pay attention to not only the temperature in your area, but also the level of humidity. Also, take note of nighttime temperatures. Experts say heat waves often become dangerous when the nighttime temperature does not drop much past the highest daytime temperature. Our bodies repair themselves at night when we sleep. So hot nighttime temperatures put great pressure on the human body. Some foods and drugs can also affect the body's temperature. Alcohol, caffeine, and sugar, for example, can weaken the body's system for cooling itself. On its website, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, explains that some people are at high risk of suffering from heat-related illnesses. A person's age and weight play a part in surviving high temperatures. People over 65 years of age and under the age of 2 are especially at risk of becoming sick from heat. Your general health is also important to consider. The CDC states that long-term diseases and conditions such as diabetes, heart disease, and mental illness can put a person at greater risk. On its website, the CDC also explains different types of heat-related illness, what to look for, and what to do. They include heat rash, sunburn, heat cramps, heat exhaustion, and the most serious, heat stroke. These are the symptoms of heat exhaustion: heavy sweating, cold, damp skin that looks lighter than usual, fast, weak heartbeat, feeling sick to your stomach or nausea, muscle pains, often called cramps, tired and weak feeling, dizziness, headache, passing out. If you have these symptoms, you must move to a cool place, loosen your clothing, put a cool wet cloth on your body, or take a cool bath, and drink water. Get medical attention if you begin vomiting, or if your sickness worsens or lasts for more than an hour. The CDC calls heat stroke a medical emergency. Get medical help right away. These are the symptoms of heat stroke: high body temperature of 39.4 degrees Celsius or higher, hot, red, dry, damp skin, fast, strong heartbeat, headache, dizziness, nausea, confusion, and passing out. Experts at the CDC say that everyone should take these steps to prevent heat-related illnesses, injuries, and death when the weather is very hot. Stay inside in air-conditioned spaces as much as possible. Contact your local health department or locate an air-conditioned shelter in your area, if possible. Drink a lot of water, even if you do not feel thirsty. Wear loose, lightweight, light-colored clothing, and use skin products that protect you from sunburn. Do not try to do too much outside. Get in cool water to lower your body temperature. Check on friends or neighbors, especially those at risk. Never leave children or pets in cars. Check your local news for health and safety updates. Do not use heating elements like indoor stoves and ovens to cook food. This will make you and your house hotter. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Herbert Hoover. He took office in 1929. Hoover was president for the early years of what Americans call the Great Depression. During those years, the United States economy slid into a severe recession. Many banks and businesses failed. At times, nearly one in four people in the U.S. workforce were unemployed. Millions of people lost their homes and savings. Hoover did not cause the Depression. The conditions had been in place before he took office. But many Americans blamed Hoover for their suffering. They believed he permitted the economic crisis to continue and even deepen during his time in office. Herbert Hoover was born in a small house in the state of Iowa. His parents were Quakers. Their religion valued simplicity, hard work, equality among people, and peaceful resolution of conflict. Hoover and his brother and sister were influenced by these beliefs, even after their parents died. By the time young Herbert Hoover was 9, he was an orphan. He moved to the state of Oregon in the Pacific Northwest and lived with an uncle. Hoover did not thrive in that situation. Reports say that he usually kept to himself, and he did not do particularly well in school. Yet one official from Stanford University liked what he saw in the young man: hard work and a desire to learn new things. At the time, Stanford University was just getting established. It admitted Hoover into its first class. Hoover had to work hard at Stanford, both in class and to earn money to pay tuition. But the experience brought many benefits. Hoover studied geology and went on to work as a mining engineer. The job led to positions in Australia, China, and other parts of the world. He became an internationally known expert on mining. He also wrote a leading textbook on mining. These experiences, along with good business investments, led to great wealth for Hoover. At Stanford, he also met the woman who would become his wife. Her name was Lou Henry. She was the first woman from Stanford to complete a study program with a degree in geology. The Hoovers went on to have 2 sons. During World War I, the Hoovers' lives changed dramatically. The family was living in London when the war began. U.S. government officials asked Hoover to organize an evacuation effort for American tourists who were in Europe. In only a few weeks, Hoover's committee succeeded. Later, he helped get food and supplies to people in Belgium. As a result, Hoover earned a public image as a smart, skilled humanitarian. When the United States entered World War I, President Woodrow Wilson asked Hoover to lead the government's Food Administration. In that position, Hoover led an effort to change Americans' behavior in order to support the war effort. He asked them to limit the kinds of food they ate and goods they bought. The effort was, for the most part, successful. Americans called their moves to limit their consumption to Hooverize. Hoover went on to organize programs to aid other countries, including Russia. He also helped parts of the U.S. recover after terrible flooding. And as Secretary of Commerce, he pushed businesses, researchers, and government officials to work together. Hoover aimed to reduce boom and bust cycles and keep the U.S. economy healthy. In all his efforts, Hoover urged Americans to choose to participate. He did not believe in using government requirements to force cooperation. Instead, he supported individualism, the idea that Americans must protect the qualities of creativity, equal opportunity, and service to others. Hoover's beliefs were popular with many Americans at the time, and with many Americans today. In the election of 1928, Hoover easily won the presidency. He promised to continue leading the country down the path of prosperity. When When Hoover took office in 1929, he said, "I have no fears for the future of our country. It is bright with hope." That was in March. In October, the U.S. stock market crashed. Thousands of investors lost their savings. The event was part of a sharp downturn in the economies of the United States and of many other countries. At first, Hoover believed the downturn would pass. But as time went on, the situation grew worse. Businesses could not expand their workforce. Farmers could not afford to harvest their crops. Everyday people had too little money to pay for housing costs and, in some cases, food. And then banks across the country began to fail. President Hoover worked hard to fix the problems. He tried many approaches, creating government agencies, urging private and public groups to cooperate, and working to balance the federal budget. But Hoover did not want to use federal money to provide direct aid to Americans. He worried that such actions would make people dependent on the government and reduce people's individual power and morale. Nor did he want to use the federal government to try to control the economy. Government intervention, he said, would lead to socialism and eventually destroy the country's founding beliefs. Instead, Hoover tried to support states and businesses indirectly and urged people to find ways to help one another. Yet many lawmakers and members of the public rejected Hoover's measures as insufficient and even cruel. Some used his name differently than they had before he took office. Now, they called the dirty shelters where hungry and homeless people lived Hoovervilles, and they called men's empty pockets Hoover flags. Although Hoover tried to persuade Americans that he was protecting their interests in the long run, voters refused to elect him for a second term. Instead, they overwhelmingly chose a president who promised an activist federal government and a hopeful New Deal for Americans. After they left the White House, the Hoovers retired to their home in Palo Alto, California. Lew Henry Hoover died in 1944. But Hoover lived 20 more years, many of them working for the public good. He helped international relief efforts, advised the U.S. government, and led committees to reform the presidency. Hoover also commented on later presidents and their policy decisions. He was especially critical of government programs set up to provide aid and intervention in Americans' lives. Until his death from cancer at the age of 90, Hoover remained committed to his beliefs. He spoke for limiting the power of the federal government and for supporting freedom of opportunity for individuals. But in the eyes of many Americans, Hoover is linked to the failure of the federal government to lessen the Great Depression. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.